Could be you were right, Ryan. Maybe this does fall under the category of not our business.
Someone out there getting his goose cooked.
Can't be too far away from here. Let's have a cautious look-see. As they moved slowly through the forest, the sky clouded over, veiling the moon. It grew suddenly cooler, and the wind began to rise from the north, disturbing the topmost branches of the old pines. Though the scream had seemed to come from not far away, they had been walking for several minutes without a sign or sound of anything. Ryan held up his hand, bringing the others huddling around him.
Anyone hear anything? Chrissy? Can you feel anything out there in the dark?
Nothing, lover. Just a sort of vague sense of the dark forces of chaos. There. That way.
Chrissy pointed ahead of them, to where the narrow hunting trail wound alongside the river. The singing had stopped, and there was only the rising breeze slicing through the woods. Ryan beckoned them on, picking his way carefully along the overgrown path, knowing that a false step could easily leave one of them with a twisted ankle, or worse. Ryan stopped immediately, shading his eye and peering through the blackness, catching a glimpse of glowing fire less than 100 yards ahead. As he stared intently at the flickering flames, he could make out several figures moving back and forth against the light.
The beauties.
What's that cracking noise?
Sounds like small gauge blaster shots, or firecrackers.
I am of the opinion that the noise is actually the sound of a lash striking sullen human flesh, though I may be in error.
Could be right, Doc. Whipping.
The group of friends stealthily approached the source of activity. The wind veered, bringing a fountain of crimson and golden sparks from the large fire that stood at the center of a clearing, about 20 paces in width. Ryan felt a thin flurry of rain strike his cheeks as he crouched in the shelter of some thorn bushes. He counted 18 men and women in the proximity of the fire glow, all completely naked and moving clockwise in a circle around the flames. Smoke was drifting toward Ryan, bitter and acrid, the scent of pine overlaid with some sort of herbs. Ryan covered his mouth, taken with a desire to cough. If it came to a firefight, he guessed they would be able to win easily enough, but there was no way of knowing whether there was a vill nearby, perhaps with dozens of armed men. It was difficult to determine the focus of the shuffling snake of people. Each of them held a short-hilted, multi-lashed whip, which they were using on the back of a person in front of them, giving rise to the sound that Doc had correctly identified. In the flickering light of the big fire, it was easy to see the tendrils of dark blood that were trickling down over the glistening buttocks of each of the participants in the ceremony. But their eyes seemed fixed on something or someone that was out of sight of Ryan and the others. It seemed to be something attached or standing against a broad oak that had its back to Ryan and the watchers. Ryan gestured for the others to follow him as he moved around the edge of the clearing to get a better look. As he led the way, the powerful Sig Sauer cocked in his right hand, finger on the trigger. He came close to inadvertently opening fire. He was suddenly aware of a creature of some kind, snaking unexpectedly from the leaf mold beneath his boots, a reptile that appeared to have dozens of tiny, stubby legs, carrying it sinuously across the trail, its iridescent orange scales damp with the steadily falling rain. The shuffling figures were moving more quickly now, the blood-clotted lashes rising and falling. Ryan realized now what the ragged, panted words were. It was an old, old hymn about meeting at the river that flows by the throne of God. The cold rain was coming with serious intent now, slanting down, filtering through the pine needles, dripping onto the forest floor all around them. Finally, Ryan could see the center of attraction, fixed to the trunk of the oak tree. It was a life-sized replica of a little tortured plastic figure they had seen crucified upside down. But this figure wasn't made of plastic. It was a naked male, upside down, his head dangling toward a pile of dry brushwood beneath the long dark hair. The heads of iron nails glittered at the center of both spread palms. Another, longer spike had been hammered bloodily through the crossed ankles, splintering the bones. His eyes had been either burned or gouged from their sockets. It was difficult to see among the dancing shadows whether the dark caverns were filled with ashes or with clotted blood. The man's fingers dangled limply, broken and wrenched out of place. It looked as though the wretch's knees had both been broken with a sledgehammer. The man's pallid skin was marked with a number of slicing cuts and purpled bruises, indicating a lengthy period of torture over the previous few hours. Ryan brushed a few drops of rain from his face. Clearing his vision, he saw that the hideous burning of the plastic man's groin was reproduced here for real. A torn hole filled with congealed blood was all that remained of the victim's manhood. Ryan thought the tortured man was dead. But suddenly, he drew several racking, shuddering breaths, his whole ribcage heaving with the effort of staying alive. A hank of cloth had been knotted around his mouth to keep him from crying out again. His head turned desperately from side to side, as though he were blindly seeking some sort of salvation. Mildred was so close to Ryan that he could almost feel her revulsion, sensing her swallowing hard, trying to avoid throwing up.
Jesus Christ.
Goodness gracious me.
Dad, how could they do that to someone?
You could take them all out.
I don't know that there's any point in that. Their sacrificial prey is doomed. The kindest thing would be to just put a 9mm bullet through his skull and end his suffering.
As the rain grew heavier, the cavorting naked figure seemed to be slowing. The water mingled with the streaks of splattered blood, turning it pink, sending it flowing all the way across emaciated bellies and wrinkled thighs and down over bare feet. The fire was dying under the torrential downpour, the light sinking in the clearing. The leader of the worshippers seemed to be a singularly tall, skinny man. He had a shaved head, streaming with rain, his eyes wide and staring. His mouth hung open, showing a series of jagged and broken teeth.
Best we finish before the weather finishes things for us.
Are we going to do something, lover?
Part of me wants to put an end to this bloody torture. The traitor used to say that you didn't clean up shit unless you'd already trodden in it. It's not our business, Christy. It can only lead to trouble.
I don't believe what I'm hearing, Mother. I don't.
Ryan rubbed his finger along the side of his nose, huddling his shoulders as the rain beat down even more strongly. The 18 men and women gathered around their victim.
In the name of the gods of sky and land and earth and sun and fire and water and stone and blood, that you may help us to a great harvest, we offer up this worthy sacrifice to you all. He came willing-like. Now we offer him to you. Through fire and through rain. Light the torch, brother, and then we can go home.
The leader gave the command to a stout young teenager beside him. The teenager tried to comply, but the raging storm made it hard to get the brand lit. Eventually it flared into life, smoking with an orange-red glow, showing that they were using some crudely refined petroleum to help it burn. The teenager, his hair dank across his shoulders, was stooping to set light to the pile of brushwood just below the head of the tortured man.
If you don't do anything, Ryan, then I will. I'm sorry, lover, but I can't let them do this.
For a fraction of a moment, it crossed Ryan's mind to punch her out, knock the blaster from her hands, stop Christy from disobeying him in front of the others. The crimson rage was blazing. But that microsecond of red mist rage passed as quickly as it had reared its cobra head. Ryan made his decision. He turned to Mildred, crouched on his left.
All right. Mildred, put away their victim. The rest of you, chill as many as you can. Best that none of them escape to carry the word back to their bill. Fire when ready.
As though orchestrated for their purpose, there was a sudden blinding flash of chem lightning, like a purple spear, exploding against the top of one of the pines, less than 100 yards away, igniting the tall tree as it seared its way to the ground. Ryan saw the effect of Mildred's single shot. She fired again, but the young man who was concentrating on lighting the fire bent forward. The rest of the naked coven stopped stock still. To them, it had to have appeared that their companion had been stricken down by a blast from heaven. Like Ryan, they couldn't have heard the sound of the shot above the crash of thunder. The tall leader started to turn toward the undergrowth, the only one of the group to begin to suspect that they were under attack. Christy shot him through the upper chest with her first shot, sending him staggering backward. Then the clearing became a maelstrom of death. It was far worse than the massacre of the Mescalero Apaches. Most of the dead fell to the chattering spray from the barrel of JB's Uzi. A hail of leaden slaughter sent them spinning and dancing, a ghastly parody of riotous pleasure. Blood fountained from sliced flesh, turning pink in the torrential downpour. By a freak of happenstance, One of the women escaped the killing ground. A bullet from Dean's blaster had clipped her right shoulder, but she managed to stagger away, dodging and sliding in the mud. Ryan tried a snap shot at her as she slithered on hands and knees behind a clump of aspens, but the bullet stripped off a length of bark and missed her by a good 18 inches.
Get her, Jack! We don't want word of this to get out!
Jack holstered his blaster and was off, a white-haired ghost, vanishing sure-footed into the gloom, like an avenging angel of savage death. Ryan and the rest stepped cautiously from cover. There was little movement in the clearing. They had barely finished checking the bodies when Jack returned to them, wiping the leaf-shaped blade of one of his throwing knives on the sleeve of his jacket. Ryan glanced across at him, his eyebrows raised in question.
Done. Good.
Do you think they were those children of the rock?
Could be. But we've come across this sort before. Let's get that poor, tortured son of a bitch down off the tree.
Seemed more like a crowd of penitents. I vacationed a few times in the Southwest and came across them down there, all across New Mexico and into Colorado and parts of Arizona. They were real big on crucifixion, I recall.
Indeed, and flagellation, mortifying the body to cleanse the spirit.
Levering out the long iron nails, they carefully lowered the ragged body to the wet ground. The center of the storm seemed to have passed them by, and the rain had eased to a steady drizzle.
We aren't going to bury him, are we, Lover?
Nah, we'll carry him back down the path and put him in the river. It's in flood, and he'll get carried well away from here. That's all we can do for him.
How about the rest of them, Dad?
Leave him. As soon as we put him in the water, I want to move on again. There's too much blood and too many corpses in this part of the Deathlands.
The Chemstorm was behaving oddly. Having rushed upon them, it had eased away to the south. But within 10 minutes, the wind had changed, and the rain turned back into a torrential downpour, battering at the trees, driven by the howling wind into the faces of Ryan and his companions. By the time they'd struggled through the darkness down the winding, treacherous path with the heavy body, all of them had taken at least one fall and were covered in slick, dark mud. The river was just around the next bend. They needed to cross it if they wanted to go north and west and get in among the tall timber. Jack, who had been out at point, suddenly reappeared a few yards in front of them.
Bad news!
What is it, Jack?
River's up!
How much?
Plenty!
Can we get across?
No way! Fucking impossible!
As soon as Ryan rounded the corner and saw the state of the river, he knew that Jack was correct. There was no way at all that they could cross the foaming maelstrom that interrupted the trail ahead of them. They heaved the corpse into the river, taking the greatest care that none of them lost their footing, and followed it into the tumbling torrent. It dipped and rose, riding the whirlpools and rapids, one arm reaching out of the white frothing bubbles, as though the dead man had revived and was seeking help from the silent watchers on the bank. The lightning and thunder of the Chemstorm had passed, but the wind had risen to something close to hurricane strength, and the rain was so heavy that if you stood with your face upturned, there was a risk of drowning. The water was icy cold and tasted of rusty iron on the tongue. The rippled blacktop vanished beneath the turbulent river and reappeared, tantalizingly close, on the other bank. It was barely 20 yards from side to side. They would have to wait for the storm to pass, then hours for the river to fall, before continuing their journey. They found a huge sequoia that had fallen 100 years earlier during the tremors of Skydark and had barely begun to rot. Its root structure was massively tangled, like a mummified Medusa's hair, forming a cavern a good 15 feet deep and at least a dozen feet across, large enough for them all to find shelter. Within a couple of minutes, JB had used one of their precious self-lights to set sparks to some dry leaf mold, some thin broken twigs, and some bigger branches, until there was a bright roaring fire. They stripped off their sodden outer garments, keeping on only their underclothes, and hung the soaked pants, shirts, and vests on the dried roots, turning them now and again as the dark, damp patches gradually became lighter and their white, wrinkled skin resumed its usual color. The steam from the wet garments hung heavy in the damp air. Ryan glanced out into the teeming rain, his right arm around Christie's shoulder, Doc at his left elbow.
You know, dear friend, this used to be a hell of a beautiful part of the country once upon a while. Now, every place we set our feet, it seems like the shadow of death falls across the land.
Something's really wrong in these hills. Trees like the gods just finished growing them. Air so fresh you could slice it with a knife. Everything green and pleasant. Like you said, it's as if there's a corpse lying under every bush. Madness. First the Apaches freaking out when there wasn't any need for it. Then those Flagies with their sick games.
Do you think that it's these children of the rock that have tainted things, Lover?
How do we know? I guess it's certainly possible. As for us, either we can keep on and explore a while more, or turn around and go back. Make a jump to someplace else.
Keep going.
I'll second that.
And I'll third it. Soon as we can get some rest, get ourselves and our clothes dry and the rain stops, then maybe find something to eat.
Seen game trails, deer of all sorts.
Won't be much fishing with the river in spate, but we can definitely hole up here. This rain looks like it's staying for a while.
Yeah, guess we don't have a lot of choice right now. Just so long as we don't have to massacre anyone else for a while.
It was a little before dawn. The fire had sunk to a pile of white glowing embers, and the rain had recently stopped. A gray mist hung in the trees, about 50 feet up, hiding the soaring tops. Ryan awakened, feeling cold and stiff, and stretched, feeling the tight muscles creak across his shoulders and the back of his neck. He quickly began to dress himself, pulling on his pants and slipping his blaster into the greased holster.
Sleep well, Lover?
Getting too old for this sort of thing. It's time I settled down in a snug little log cabin with a warm fire and an old mongrel sleeping on the hearth.
And a snug little wife waiting up the stairs for you to go and join her?
Sure, that too.
Christy rolled out of her blanket. In less than half a minute, she too was dressed and armed. They made no effort to keep quiet, and within a few moments, the others were stirring.
Aye, the three Kennedys. This may have suited Daniel Boone, but I find it parlously chill. Who let the fire be so badly neglected?
All of us.
No point in getting it going again. God, what time is it, John?
A little after 5:30.
I could have used another couple hours sleep. That's one of the 101 things I hate about Deathlands. You never get to sleep in.